in place, duly constituted by virtue of having been established under the Act, and that we are merely formalizing them in our rule book. So whatever they've been doing thus far is perfectly within the legal ambit provided for in the Act. So, yeah, so that is essentially the main item of our discussion. Draft rules have been circulated, I presume, and ours is to look at them and determine whether we are happy with them. And then finally, we look at the minutes and then close. Everybody happy with the agenda? Yes.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good afternoon. On the agenda, the order of items was a consideration of the draft minutes first, and then the draft rules afterwards. And the reason why I'm taking the liberty of raising that is in respect of the following. Unfortunately, I need to be at 2 o'clock in dealing with the secrecy bill. And the and I've got problems which I related at the last occasion on the draft minutes. Usually people have no problems of minutes, except for the fact that on these occasions minutes are being used for court proceedings. And so I have an issue on their accuracy. And I have a couple of matters arising out of the minutes.
Can I propose that even though the agenda looks like them, the assumption I have that the draft rules relating to the establishment of these committees should be fairly straightforward. And I did not anticipate much debate about that, that we dispose of that so that we can use the rest of the time fully. I suppose all of us have to be in the house at 2 o'clock. Would anybody have strong objection to that?
No.
All right. So on that basis, Marina, you want to lead us quickly?
Draft rules have been circulated a few times, so I presume members have had an opportunity to look at them. We've tried to stick to the style in the rules where we try not to repeat too much of what is in the Act. With this particular Act, it's more difficult than it has been with several other cases. For example, the establishment of the Committee on the AG and things like that. That was easier, where one could just refer to the Act and say everything applies. But we've made general powers of committees applicable to these committees, but then there are a few specific things that we had to include. For example, you'll see consultation is a new thing, which the Act determines must happen. So we've said, sorry, that's on the second page. We have functions and powers. We give it, you know, the powers that committees have. But on the next page, we have consultation, and we say it must consult with its counterpart in the council and other committees on matters specified in a manner agreed by the committee. Because the Act doesn't set up exactly how this particular consultation must take place, except that there must be consultation. So that's not part of general powers that committees have, so we've included that. The other one is public involvement. That's also a new thing, but which in terms of the Act is required. The rest is oh yes, there's one other thing that I can mention. Under the Standing Committee on Appropriations, if there is a conflict, or if conflicting amendments are proposed by to a money bill is proposed by portfolio committees, then there needs to be a process to get that deadlock sorted out. So we have written in a mediation process, which is based on in part on the mediation process that we already have in Parliament when we have conflict between the two houses. So we've written in that there must be a subcommittee of a standing committee consisting of the chair and three other members, must conduct mediation with a view to finding agreement on the conflicting amendments. and that the subcommittee will be advised by 3 members from each of the portfolio committees that have submitted conflicting amendments and 2 members designated by the Speaker. And then we've included, this is a case where the committee will always be closed in order to do that. So we say in order to facilitate negotiation and mediation, and despite rules 152 and 153, meetings of the subcommittee are closed to non-members of the participating committees, including the public and the media, except with the permission of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. So the committee can decide if it wants that subcommittee, which is busy with the mediation and negotiation on these conflicting things. It's just, you know, horse trading happens, and it's to encourage openness amongst the subcommittee members that we wrote that in, and we say the Standing Committee can give permission for this process to be open if it wishes, but in normal circumstances it would be a closed process. And that's also public involvement is important for both committees. So that's about it. Okay, then Perrin, he's the boffin on the Money Act, so he also just wants to make some input.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to raise a few specific points. The one is that I think, firstly, that the mediation process, the rule that Marina just explained, is based on the rules that apply to mediation currently with bills. Is that correct?
So
that's not something especially new. But the other two issues is you'll see that under the functions and powers of the Standing Committee on Finance, specifically sub 2, it says that the committee must also perform the functions listed in Rule 201. The idea there being that this committee would still retain its oversight powers over National Treasury, over the other financial institutions that it currently oversees. The Standing Committee on Appropriations doesn't have that oversight function. Its functions are more specialized, more to do with implementing the Money Act and so on. So even though the Standing Committee on Appropriations can call in departments, National Treasury in particular, it doesn't have an oversight function specifically over them. So that is also captured in the rules, technically in the rules. The only other issue, and this is perhaps something that can be dealt with later as developments unfold, is to do with the actual composition of these committees. Because they may have a very heavy workload, because they may be very specialized, you find in some countries that budget committees have a larger composition than other committees. But that's something which can be determined later. The rules do allow for the Speaker to make that determination in together with the Rules Committee. Thank you.
All right, colleagues, that's the presentation. Table before you. Any comments?
Can I just get slightly more clarity on the background to the mediation committee being closed? I'm trying to find it in the current rules, whether the current rules provide for a closed session.
The current rules do provide for the committee to close meetings. I mean, in certain circumstances, meetings can be closed.
Yeah.
And in the case of the mediation committee, in the joint rules, the mediation committee, when there's mediation on between the two houses on a bill, when it's stuck on a bill, that's closed.
I'm trying to get that principle set.
Yes.
It is already there. Okay.
Yeah. So it's an issue of as we said, to just encourage openness between.
Just for the record, really, could you let us know what call number it is? I
have to find it.
You don't need to do it now.
If I may just mention something else, which may I say in general we accept, I think we both of us agree that this is merely a technical exercise. There's nothing funny in the rules, it's simply to provide for the possible gaps in the law. The one point I do want to raise is the composition of subcommittees. We talk at the moment, say the committee must appoint a subcommittee from among its members, and I know this is a general rule which comes from the general rules as well. The composition of subcommittees don't specifically say how the subcommittee must be composed. So whether we can argue for it to be introduced here, or whether we should wait for it when we discuss the rules in general later, that's also a possibility. But it is a worrying factor that there needn't be any opposition members in that subcommittee. In other words, the the members could all come from one party, the way it's written now. And we would have been more comfortable if there was a, some sort of a stipulation that at least one member should be from a rank of opposition parties.
We normally capture it in there.
No, there is no provision for specifically, it's practice, I mean it's strong practice that in subcommittees you normally have opposition members included. It would depend on the size of the subcommittee.
Isn't there an underlying principle in the constitution itself that overrides this by
proportionality is a provisional constitutional provision, but the current rules, rule 141(2) says the parent committee of a subcommittee must appoint the members of the subcommittee from among its members without saying our chapter should be appointing the parties should be represented. So this is part of the general rules, and we're doing a specific one now, and I don't think
remember, we're not writing the general rules first and foremost.
We should flag this as a possible amendment for the general rules when we get there.
Yeah. No. Look, there's still an outstanding issue going forward of a review of the rules, which is a long-term story. I don't know. Will eventually come across it in our lifetime, but just to say that by way of example, I chair the Auditor General's Committee, and we set up a task team to look at an issue, and our approach was simply because the task team was not a task team formed by an ANC study group; it was a task team formed by the committee. With a multi-party structure by definition. Therefore, the task team itself should be constituted as such as well. And throughout my experience in this institution, is that that's how we've done things, almost saying that it's a convention, if not a constitutional principle anyway. So I would be surprised if we approach things differently elsewhere. But JJ?
Yeah, look, just to confirm that the section on the proposed that is almost word for word from the Rule 110 of the mediation, so it's 110 joint page 52 of the book. I do know also that the mediation committee, but it's big, but it reads nine members of the assembly elected in accordance with by the assembly rules in substantially the same proportion of parties represented in the assembly. So that does specify a proportionality. I would have thought and then a party represented in the assembly or council which is not represented in the mediation committee may designate one of its members in either the assembly or the council to attend and that may not vote. Okay, now I don't know if that one is relevant, because it brings me on to the issue of there is no provision for decisions by mediation. So they mediate, they get agreement, and if they don't, there's no agreement. So there's no decision.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's what you wanted.
But they report to the parent committee, to the appropriations committee, and the appropriations committee, I think, they must take the process further.
Make
and I think the act is think about whatever. Not that I can remember.
Sorry.
Yes.
No, the act isn't specific. But I think that, if I recall, when we were looking at these rules, we of the view that the subcommittee can only really make proposals to the Appropriations Committee.
Yeah, but now that might be inherent. I think it should be in the rules to say what happens.
Mm.
You know, so a rule that the subcommittee shall report on its shall provide a report to the the Standing Committee on Appropriations for their consideration. Something like that. Because it just left hanging. So there's that.
Let's just explore how the rules are generally on this kind of situation.
There is, because we say that the committee may appoint a subcommittee from one to assist the committee, the subcommittee to adhere to the provisions of Part 3 of Chapter 12 of the Assembly Rules.
And that
says, a question before a subcommittee is decided by consensus. If consensus cannot be reached, all views in the subcommittee on the question must be reported to the parent committee.
Okay. So I suppose it would be covered. Okay. I would call that then. Then it comes to the question of the proportionality. Now, maybe on one other question before that, why two members designated by the speaker?
Who are they from the same group? Or
Because you have three members from each portfolio committee, and there might be, because it's mediation, it was almost like we looked at it like we looked at the disciplinary committee, where there might be a special, with this particular amendment that they want to propose, there might be expertise resident in other members other than the ones in the portfolio committee that speaker could then designate to assist with the mediation process. It's almost like senior members that one could bring in there to assist. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, without saying it directly, because you have the appropriations committee members who are there, the chairperson and three other members, and then you have three from each portfolio committee. So the two members would just be, it's almost like a, not that they have an arbitration function, but you understand what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're saying. I'm not sure if it's necessary. Your experts are in the portfolio and your three from the appropriations committee are effectively the mediators. What could maybe be done is a provision that the speaker may appoint an additional two members of the assembly.
If requested, we can do that.
So there's not. Look, I don't know how many conflicts we're ever going to have. If requested, the speaker.
So we'll make
so
it
B
three.
And
C,
B and the subcommittee will be advised by three. The speaker, if requested, the speaker may approach two additional members to advise the committee. Two additional members to advise the committee, something like that. Then it comes back to the question of proportionality. If you've got three members, you've in fact got
you could
have a provision that one of the members from each of the three, because you've got three groups of three, must be from the opposition. Must be from an opposition party or the largest opposition party, I don't know.
That will be determined by the proportions in the House,
yes,
from differing parliaments.
But nine is easy to reflect a proportionality. Three is unless one just puts in substantially the same proportion of parties are represented in the Assembly.
Yeah.
I think that's
the clause from the joint rules. And that would then have to apply to each of the three groups of three.
Okay, would you then want that when you say may appoint a subcommittee, or do you only want it to reflect it under the mediation committee, subcommittee?
It's only the mediation committee.
Okay, so you want the proportionality reflected?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is the issue of proportionality therefore a matter that would then be regulated in the broad framework of the rules? But that because in the case of the mediation committee, there's a unique element that therefore in that context, that principle is being reputed so that a specific dynamics, if you like, are properly catered for in that context. I'm just trying to understand how we justify why in this instance we would want to regulate it specifically.
Because there is a section on mediation
in the act itself.
No, in the rules we have before us.
All right.
It specifies that a subcommittee of the standing committee consisting of the chairperson and three other members must conduct mediation with a view to finding agreement. And that it must be, and then it's this thing about then it's got the thing, so they conduct the mediation, and then it's the subcommittee will be advised by three members from each portfolio committee. So because those numbers are given and it's specified, I think the issue comes in as to the proportionality that the DA have raised. Now, obviously, I think if there wasn't some form of proportionality, I think it would be in conflict with the Constitution. So there could be an inherent proportionality, but would it harm putting it? But the problem is three is quite difficult to reflect proportionality. In fact, it's for the chairperson and the others.
Would it help if one said a multi-party subcommittee?
Say that again, Marie.
If one said, when conflicting amendments are proposed by portfolio committees, a multi-party subcommittee of the standing committee on programs consisting of chair and three other members must conduct mediation.
Then we're introducing a new concept. Do we use that concept elsewhere in the rules?
No, we don't.
I'm loath of using new concepts to deal with specific areas and deviating from traditional concepts that are there elsewhere in the rules and are understood, because you see, currently our committee system is a multi-party committee system. It's required to be a multi-party committee system by virtue of the Constitution. And Mr. Ellis wouldn't have to go to the Constitutional Court to accept that. It would be a sad day in Parliament if we declined to that situation. So I'm just thinking aloud. Do we really want to create new problems by being specific about certain things and in the process create the impression that elsewhere those things might not necessarily apply because they're not expressly put in that manner? Mr.
Chairman, this whole debate needs to be taken back, or be taken against the background of what you referred to earlier as the whole review of rules. We think that that's long overdue, and really would like to know that this was going to be taking place very soon. If we knew that that review of rules was going to take place, and this whole concept of proportionality and so on could be raised there, we would feel a lot more comfortable. Let me be frank with you and say that neither Mr. Pretorius or I had any serious problems with the mediation committee as it stands at the present time. Because I think we did take, I mean, Mr. Pretorius did raise earlier under subcommittees that we would like to know that there was some kind of proportionality involved there. But it's not an issue here that we are necessarily going to go to war on. We would prefer to know that in the broader context of the review of rules in general, that this issue will be properly and fully debated. So I'm saying to you that over the composition of the mediation committee, we're not going to go to war with you on this, if it makes it easier for you.
Can I request that unless we feel strongly that in this instance we must provide, I'm here to chair, not to dictate to the committee. I stand to be guided. I'm worried about us dealing with an issue which is a lot broader than the narrower aspect that we're dealing with here. Can't we just let sleeping dogs lie for now?
Chairman.
Yes,
thank you.
I'm Rossini.
You see, I think that we're dealing here with a sui generis animal, because you really have a conflict between two majorities here. One formed in the portfolio committee in the National Assembly, one formed in the portfolio committee in the National Council of Provinces, and these two majorities need to come together and find a resolution of their difference of views. So as much as I am constantly an advocate of minority rights, I would concede that in this specific context the presence of opposition parties plays a lesser role, and the dictates of Section 52(7) of the Constitution says that the rules must make provisions for the accommodation of minorities in a manner consistent with democracy would be less imperative. Where I do have a greater problem, though, and I do accept the precedent of the joint rules, but nonetheless, this thing of closing the meeting in a matter which has got to do with the money of the state and the money of the people, I find it difficult, especially if it is motivated on the basis of facilitating negotiations. And I do accept that that's the fact, but if people want to negotiate, they can always go to the bar and have a discussion. But when we meet as members of parliament, we should not we should do so publicly and try to set as few precedents as possible to the constitutional obligation to have public meetings. Also, because the way I read the Constitution, I don't have in front of me, it seems that it says that meetings must be public and may be closed when necessary. So it seems that it's an ad hoc decision rather than exempting an entire class of parliamentary activities from the constitutional requirement of publicity. Thank you.
What is the concept here, if somebody can just explain to me, relating to the closure of meetings? Param, do you want to just explain?
Thank you, Chair. Well, obviously, well, the rules do make provision for the closure of meetings generally. I don't have the rules here, but they do set out criteria in which case generally committees can be closed. They include, for example, when there's prejudice to a particular individual, where that individual is under discussion.
Yeah. I don't want to go into the merits and the criteria that inform that. I just wanted to understand in the context here the vexed issue of closure or non-closure. What are we actually, did we say something that is exceptional from the arrangement elsewhere in the rules in relation to closure here?
No.
I'm trying to understand why does the issue arise in the context of these rules.
I think the only reason can be that we're simply copying the mediation procedure which is in the current joint rules.
And that mediation procedure, that current procedure says that the process must be closed at all times.
The mediation process currently, when there
is closed altogether.
It's closed.
Mm. So that's really the vexed issue.
Yeah, look,
JJ?
As I said, it's the same wording. In order to facilitate negotiation, mediation, meeting with the mediation committee, despite joint rules 47 and 48, closed to non-members of the committee, including the public and the media.
Hmm.
But I don't know, I would agree with Dr. Andersley for once. I don't know, I mean, mediation committee, as you have now, and we've had in the past, you could have the provincial delegates being from different parties. You technically could have one party controlling the majority of the provinces and another party having the majority of the national in the National Assembly. And it may be useful that, and they take decisions. I don't really know whether we need this mediation. I mean, the mediation committee in terms of conflict of bills. This is largely going to be a mediation committee that you've got, again, as Dr. Martini said, it's largely going to be a majority party in the agreement, which you're then going to have a caucus about. The matter is going to be referred to the House for decision. keeping everybody out, if you could say, look, if there's a conflict between the Police Portfolio Committee and the Justice Fund, over money, and the Police Committee come and pack the Mediation Committee with their members, I suppose that's why where it means, in order to facilitate mediation and negotiation, stop that happening. But I don't know if that would happen. So really long and short of it is I don't think that Sub-Rule 2 is necessary.
Look, the character of Parliament is one, as Dr. Ambrosini characterizes it, as emphasized in the Constitution. One is that largely conducts business in public. So, closing should be the exception rather than the norm. So I think that we'll be short of the constitutional imperative if we moved from the premise that everything is closed and full stop, actually. Not even create an exemption for that from closure. It's an extreme situation. Now, even if the joint rules may be providing otherwise, I am not sure whether we should necessarily follow them just because they provide in that fashion. If there is serious constitutional concerns, especially given the fact that this does not currently exist as a problem in the NA rules. If it's a problem, it's a problem of the joint. So why import it into the NA when we create something new? So I would use that approach, if that is the general feeling. If in the current rules, provision is made for a possibility of closure, and if that principle extends to this thing that we're creating here, then we need not deal with it.
Chairman, I'll start. We agree with that approach. Rule 152 provides for the closure of a meeting in any case under certain circumstances. So if the need arises in future, then the Mediation Committee may use 152 to close it up if they want to.
And in fact, if we're silent and not even try to regulate it, we give us all the flexibility that 152 provides, rather than having to create a monster that we don't know how in practice is going to pan out.
And then, Chair, if it's not closed, the issue of proportionality becomes a non-issue.
Yeah.
There's no voting anyway. Anyone can come to this
process. Yeah.
All
right. So we killed two birds with one stone in the process. Colleagues, anything else? I'll smile if you tell me otherwise you're happy with this rule, and so that I can relieve you sooner rather than later. Yeah. Don't worry. Dr. Ambrosini.
Chairman, the Honorable Jeffrey is like a broken clock. He's right twice a day, irrespective.
Yeah. And don't worry, Dr. Ambrosini, when we come back next year, we're going to reopen the floor crossing provisions in the Constitution, and we'll invite you to cross over to the end. Yes, the other thing
that you can do in 2011 is start this complete review of rules. Is it going to happen next year?
Let's have that meeting.
Okay, maybe let me quickly just tell you this, that I've been in discussions with Marina, and she's been working on this document that if I just spill beans on her, I've been pestering her every second week to bring it to me, and it's still coming. But part of the complexity around it also is going to be the fact that there's a lot of institutional review or reform that's taking place in this parliament, which obviously is going to have to find expression in the new set of rules. A lot of policy areas that are still outstanding, and I can go on listing them. Fatima has been working on the new legislative process document. There's been been two reviews, one on the Chapter 9 by Kada Asmal, another one on the APRM that still needs to find expression. There's this Money Matters Amendment Act. There's this oversight model that still needs to be refined, and so that we know what rules need. So my reluctance, really, if I were to put it that way, is a situation where essentially the review of rules is going to be about changing the culture, but not being able to touch on the institutional reform issues because they're not ready. So we will need to find a balance between moving with speed and changing the culture and practices and so on, whilst at the same time we look at which institutional reforms could be ready to be incorporated in the review, especially the money matters thing. The money matters thing, as I said earlier, has its complications. There may be a need to review that act. I don't know. I don't know how far the people are grappling with the problems there and whether they will end up conceding that certain changes need to occur. If that happens, that changes our whole approach to developing rules to support that legislation. So amidst all these complexities, we need to find some happy medium that says now we're ready to proceed despite this or that shortcoming. So that's the other context to it. But in the meantime, Marina will have to speak for herself now directly to the committee as to how far she is. What guarantee can she give us?
The first meeting next
week. All right.
Can I just ask? I'm sorry, I need to go because I'm first in the house. Can I just ask Assam Rossini, your problems with the minutes? It's very difficult to do. The last time it was agreed that you would submit, you would just let us know in writing exactly what your problems were, so that we can actually retrieve the tapes and get verbatim
I don't need to put it in writing. I put it very clearly. I said that the description of the intervention of the Chinese delegation is describing a process in which there was a second bite of the cherry, is described that was not correct, and the way it was left that we were going back and checking in the tapes. That's number one. Number two, my second objection was that I wanted the record of that. The only way I could find the agreement satisfactory if in respect of the text proposed and the amendment of the rules was if there was a deeming provision that if a private member's bill has not gone through the committee within 3 months or 6 months, shall be deemed as having gone through the committee. Otherwise, everything remains below the line, and the effectiveness of the member's right to introduce legislation can be tempered by the fact that the private member's committee does not decide on it. So these were my two main concerns. I don't need to put it in
colleagues,
writing. I mean,
can I intervene and say, I don't know how we're going to resolve the minutes issue. Clearly we're not going to be able to pass this minutes of today either. At least we can rest assured that come the week after next, the next week, we will be able to table this rules, and I'm happy. Minutes I will not die about.
The last set is still outstanding.
We'll negotiate how we're going to resolve the issue.
On the 17th.
On the 17th, at which we're going to table our report. All right, colleagues,
should we not approve that report?
Which report?
The one that you table on the 17th. I mean, each committee approves a report before tabling in the House. Each subcommittee approves a report before...
I thought we agreed on the content. We'll speculate it if anybody has difficulty.
Can we go to the process of prior circulation?
Yeah.
Thank
you. We'll have prior circulation. If any member wishes to correct anything, they'll relay, liaise directly with my office.
Thank you very much.
Take it from there. All right.